Seeking mental health care can be overwhelming and even scary, but it doesn't have to be. I'm Dr. Josephine McNary, and I'm committed to making this process easier for you. Each week, my expert guest and I unravel a different form of therapeutic intervention in order to bring comfort and understanding and to help you get back to your true self. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mind Stories. Today, I'm pleased to have on as our guest, Dr. Alan Rodriguez. Dr. Rodriguez received her master's and doctoral degrees from Adler School of Professional Psychology in Chicago. She did her graduate training at Louisiana State University's Department of Psychiatry, where she worked with both inpatient and outpatient community mental health. She works with a wide range of issues, including mood and anxiety disorders, relationship difficulties, and with survivors of trauma. Her clinical interests are in the connection between developmental trauma and mental illness, particularly for individuals who are diagnosed with borderline and other personality disorders. Having a variety of different training experiences with regard to theoretical orientation and focus on trauma, she approaches working with patients from an integrated, stage-based perspective. She is currently a licensed psychologist in the state of California and based in the Echo Park neighborhood of Los Angeles. In her private practice, she offers individual, couples, and group psychotherapy, as well as supervision and training for postgraduates in mental health. Welcome, Dr. Rodriguez. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mind Stories. Today, I'm happy to have on as our guest, Dr. Alan Rodriguez. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I've been excited to have you on as a guest because I know you do a lot of work with DBT or dialectical behavioral therapy, both for individuals and groups. And so I'm really excited to hear a little bit more about DBT and hear about how you work. So I think the first big question is that people want to know is, what is DBT?
So DBT is, well, when it first came on the scene, it was primarily used as an inpatient or intensive outpatient program. So it's a combination of individual treatment, group work, and then phone contact with a therapist outside of session. And so those three components together made up most traditional DBT programs. Now that it's been around for longer, there are folks like myself who do kind of different iterations of it. So right now I do individual DBT and I do group DBT, but I am not part of a treatment program. So I am a private practitioner and I will treat folks both in individual and group at the same time, but it's not an intensive program. So that's kind of the structure of it. But content-wise, it's a combination of a few different theoretical approaches to doing therapy. So folks are maybe familiar with mindfulness. So practicing being in the here and now, observing the self, that's the first component that you learn. And then another important piece of it is psychoeducation around emotions. So why do we have emotions? What do they do for us from an evolutionary perspective? How do we know when we're having an emotion? What is that like in the body? And what are emotions data about? So that's another big piece. And then there's also the cognitive behavioral piece, and people are probably familiar with or have heard of that before. So focusing on thoughts and distortions in thinking and figuring out what folks' patterns are in terms of thinking and feeling, what is working for them, and where do they maybe want to make some shifts or some changes to be more effective in their thinking and their feeling.
Got it. So if someone was thinking about DBT versus, you know, other types of therapy, what is DBT particularly effective in treating?
I think a broad range of issues. I think anyone who could use some extra help, especially in addition to their individual therapy, with emotion regulation. So a lot of people will identify with having really intense emotions. And when those emotions come up that they feel really like flooded or destabilized by it. So I think that's really what DBT tends to target, that group of people. But I think also people who might feel more disconnected from their emotions can also benefit. I think it's really helpful for a broad range of people, but that's typically what the target audience is for DBT, is folks who have like high highs and low lows and have trouble feeling a sense of control over their emotional experience.
Got it. So it's maybe something someone might be thinking about DBT if
they need a better way to digest their emotional experience.
Exactly. And folks that find themselves in crisis a lot, that can also, it can be helpful for that too. And crisis could mean a range of things, like feeling like you are in a crisis or actually being in a lot of crises or some combination of the two, like externally versus internally, if that makes sense.
Got it. Yeah, because maybe the emotions of those people, they're kind of in overdrive during those crises, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So how do you approach, you know, the initial stages of working with somebody with this type of therapy?
Yeah. So my own practice of DBT tends to be not strict individual DBT and then DBT group. So those two things kind of integrated together.
Got it.
Since I'm not as much of like a strict DBT practitioner.
Let's start with a group then.
Okay.
Would that be easier?
Yeah, I'll do. So what I tend to do is I have an orientation session with someone, at least one, before they start group. So I collect background information on them, get a sense of the history of their mental health treatment, find out if there's any significant traumas that are important to know about, and also kind of an inventory of what they see as the problematic behaviors, thoughts, patterns that they're hoping to work on in the context of both individual and group. And then it's also a chance for them to ask me questions about, like, questions you're asking, like, what is DBT? Like, is it a good fit for me? What should I anticipate the group will look like and participation in the group? So yeah, so I do the orientation, and then if someone feels like it's a good fit for them, and I think we're both basically agreed that it seems like a good fit, then I intake them into the group, and usually group runs for 4 months. It's every week for an hour and a half, and we start the group with a mindfulness exercise, and then we move on to talking about homework and exercises that they have done for the previous session. And then the last piece of the group is going into new material. It really feels like a class is the feedback that I've gotten, kind of like a seminar. It doesn't feel like what I think people imagine group therapy is. It's more psychoeducational. I've had people say it feels like emotions 101, and it's a therapeutic environment, but you still get to think about and talk about therapy and yourself in a way that you might not get to in more traditional talk therapy. And
got it. Okay. So what would say be, if we think about it as a course, I mean, there are skills you kind of need to master. It sounds like there's a curriculum that you move through.
Yes. There's 4 different modules, and those are mindfulness, interpersonal effectiveness, emotion regulation, and distress tolerance. So each month is dedicated to one module. And there's a set order that you do the modules in. I have revised that a bit for my own practice based on some feedback from clients. Mm-hmm. So I do mindfulness first, and then emotion regulation, and then interpersonal effectiveness, and then distress tolerance.
And what are some of the, I mean, I guess mindfulness, people kind of understand the mindfulness piece of that. What is some language you use to kind of build around emotional regulation and trying to get a better handle of your emotions with mindfulness? How does mindfulness lead to the ability to regulate emotions in a better way?
So mindfulness is sort of the foundation of everything that you're doing in DBT, because it's about observing the self, right? So stepping outside of yourself and being able to watch what's happening with you both internally and externally. So practicing observing kind of has to come before what it is you're observing. So we practice that through every session and throughout the entirety of the group. But when we start to go into emotion regulation and talk about, like I was saying before, like, what are emotions? How do we know if we're having them? What do they feel like in our bodies? All of that necessitates observation, right? Like, how do I know where I feel that in my body? Or once I feel something in my body, like some sort of sensation, how do I know what emotion label belongs with it? Mm-hmm. Not everyone feels emotions in the same ways or in the same places in their body. And some people don't. Some people very much identify with feeling things in somatically. And for other folks, it feels like a thought. So it's a lot of tracking what's happening inside you. Huh. And what we know about talking about and labeling emotions is that just that process in itself is regulating. even before you introduce other interventions, such as, I mean, anything. So like maybe you're holding on to a rock that helps you feel grounded, right? If you're know you're going into a stressful situation, it doesn't really do you any good to have the rock unless you know to pay attention to yourself holding the rock, which requires this self-observation piece.
Got it. Okay. And what would be kind of this idea of some assignments that someone might need to do during the week between their group sessions?
We do exercises for whatever module we're in. So in mindfulness, you do mindfulness exercises. So you might have the assignment to go on a mindful walk or wash the dishes mindfully or pick something of your choosing to do mindfully and then come back and tell the group about it and report what worked, what didn't work. A lot of what I'm talking to folks about is like figuring out things that work for you, because not everything is going to work for everyone. And practicing the homework is also a practice in figuring out what's effective to help you regulate. And also, and that's not necessarily the same thing as the other folks in group. For emotion regulation, it might be thinking about, or feeling about rather, what emotions tend to come up at specific times. So like noticing triggers for certain emotions. So tell me a time during the week that this emotion came up and kind of work backwards from the emotion popping up. What was happening just before that? And what was happening just before that? And what was happening just before that? And so on. In the interpersonal module, you might have an assignment to like have a difficult conversation with someone and observe yourself while you're doing that, or prepare the language you're going to use ahead of time using some of the skills we've learned. Even rehearsing having that conversation with your therapist or someone else before you go into the difficult interpersonal situation. So those are some examples of what homework might look like.
Got it. And what about the group? What is the benefit of the group?
The group, like I was mentioning before, it's very psychoeducational. And so it's really giving folks a peek into the background of what therapy is. I mean, not all therapy, of course, but what a lot of therapy is and how it works and why it works. And I think that's not typically something that we can have or that we have conversations in our individual therapy with our therapists about. I mean, that's not necessarily true for all therapists. Some people are fine doing that, but often that's not what you're doing in one-on-one treatment. So I think it's an opportunity for people to get some good foundation in clinical psychology and like what the purpose is and what the background is, and then also to be able to ask someone who is a mental health professional more direct questions that they want answers to.
Right. And I mean, I'm assuming part of it is people benefit from hearing other people's experiences and struggles with regulating their emotions.
Yes, that too. And then also in DBT, the leaders are also encouraged to self-disclose. So in my groups, I will talk about things in my past that maybe I struggled with that I worked on and how DBT skills helped me, which is, I've had a mix of reactions, but many clients really appreciate that because I think that there's this idea that therapists don't struggle and they have all the answers, and that's not true. A lot of us have done a lot of work and continue to work on ourselves, and I think that normalizes the whole process of engaging in therapy for people.
Mm-hmm. Got it. How did the name originate? Deep dialectical behavioral therapy.
So Marshall Linehan, who is the creator of this approach, the core of what we're doing is dialectics. So this comes from various traditions, but she talks about it in terms of holding two ideas or two things that are seemingly in opposition to each other at the same time. So like I can be, for example, I can be a good person and also do something that hurts someone else. So a lot of people might think, well, if you do something that hurts someone, then you're bad. Well, this is not necessarily the case. I can both work on accepting myself as I am and also work on changing and want to do better.
Got it. So it's an acceptance with this kind of strive to be better or do better too at the same time.
Exactly. So you can think about it as balancing acceptance with change.
Got it. And when would someone move from the group more towards an individual model?
I think it really just depends on the person and what they're looking for. I think folks who are having trouble with stability, just in terms of like, can I hold a job? Can I support myself? Can I feed myself? Can I get to my appointments? Can I sort of do the basics? Someone who is struggling with that would likely benefit from both individual and group DBT at the same time. If those things are going relatively well for someone, then group might be enough for them to like get the skills, but also be engaged in a different kind of individual therapy. I should say, by the way, a lot of DBT practitioners are sort of DBT purists. Like I was saying at the beginning, like there's a DBT is this treatment modality that happens in an intensive clinical setting. And I am not one of those people. So I am integrating it into other types of therapy as well. So that's my perspective, but other folks might disagree with me on that. But I do DBT skills group with people who are not in DBT individual.
Got it. Okay. And is the group made up of people who say anxiety is my major issue or depression is my major issue? Or, I mean, can anybody come in the group and, you know, take part in despite, you know, the fact that maybe anxiety isn't more of a major issue or maybe depression is? How does that work?
Yeah, that matters. I think the particular, diagnoses, like that doesn't matter as much as the goals that you're going there for. So for a lot of people who have depression, struggle with emotion regulation, and so do a lot of people who have anxiety, right? So I would say the symptoms are not as important as like what people are looking for help with. I mean, most people are at the point that they get to me and interested in group are talking about, you know, their symptoms in a more complex way than just I have depression or I have anxiety. Like they've identified some patterns of thinking or feeling or behaving that they want specific help with. Like suicidal ideation is a big one. Self-harm, any sort of compulsive behaviors like eating disorders or substance abuse, all of these things can be addressed with DBT. I'm not saying DBT is a cure-all, but there's a way to conceptualize most symptoms in a helpful way in this model.
Got it. So when someone goes through the process of course of DBT, what do people report in terms of what changes for them?
A lot of people talk about the ability to observe the self. So the mindfulness piece we were talking about. So they notice more quickly when they're having a feeling and are usually able to identify it. That process gets faster and faster the more that they practice mindfulness. It's not necessarily the case that their emotions become less intense, but they feel more capable of regulating them when they do come up and are intense. People tend to really like the interpersonal effectiveness module too, because it's a lot of kind of basic conflict skills. And a lot of folks come from families where conflict was either totally unacceptable, and so they got no experience in how to engage in it, or people come from really explosive environments where conflict is maybe even violent, right? So having some more like grounded and regulated skills to have a difficult conversation with someone or say something about yourself that's difficult to share, I think people really appreciate that.
I got it.
And even just being introduced to the idea that like conflict does not need to be dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it allows someone to structure their emotions in a way that don't feel so out of control or their responses aren't so out of control by just defining them and kind of knowing that you have some skills to really work on that seems very therapeutic.
Yeah, it's all about connecting with and then organizing your inner experience.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it's hard work.
Yes. I would argue most therapy is hard work, but
right.
Yes. If you're really doing it.
Right. So if you want it to be effective, you really have to be all in.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that every day needs to be an all in day, because it's just not fair, I think, for us to expect ourselves to be constantly working at that capacity. And I think that's another helpful thing that DBT preaches, if you will, is self-compassion. You know, like if you can take a pause and recognize that you really want to eat that entire gallon of ice cream, I care less about whether or not in 5 minutes you actually go and eat the gallon of ice cream. And I care more about just being able to like insert that pause. That in itself is hard work.
Right. What about, it seems like it could be effective for so many different struggles that people have. Are there things that it might not be appropriate for?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think if someone is relatively in touch with their emotional experience and feel like pretty confident about their ability to deal with what comes up, mm-hmm. it might not be the best treatment for you. I mean, if someone's looking for like a lot of like relationship, like if someone's having relationship issues, this is a good question. I hadn't actually thought of this. What is it not good for? I think it's really foundational stuff. So I think folks who feel like they have a good foundation in self-observation, in understanding their emotions, they feel pretty confident about dealing with conflict. Maybe they're dealing with more like existential issues or grief or yeah, that it wouldn't be the go-to. I'm trying to think of other examples. I'm not giving you a good answer.
No, I think that is a good answer. That makes a lot of sense because it kind of, in a way, just summarizes what the whole goal of the therapy is, right? And if that's not something that you're necessarily looking for help with, but I assume that most people would probably benefit from it because that, you know, most people could use some help kind of defining emotions and processing them and figuring out how to relate to those emotions.
Yeah. So I think like more advanced interpersonal issues might not be addressed by it either. You know, like you get the basics, but then some more complex relationship issues or also anything that maybe I think it's helpful for trauma, but I think that there's also an important somatic piece that isn't as focused on in DBT that is also really important for trauma, folks who have trauma. DBT sort of touches on it, but it's not a big focus. And I think for a lot of folks who are trauma survivors, really developing the relationship with the body is an important focus.
Right. But I mean, there is probably also quite a link between people who have a history of trauma and having difficulty with regulating their emotions.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that DBT is kind of missing. It's not totally absent, but it's not a big focus that I have brought into my practice of DBT mm-hmm. is the focus on the body and tracking and grounding, because it is a big part of emotion regulation.
Right. And it doesn't sound like it would be detrimental to the process of DBT.
No.
It's just in addition to it.
It's right? In there. It's just not as explicit. So I make it really explicit with my clients.
Okay. And you had mentioned earlier something about, you know, this could be used in conjunction with someone's individual therapy. And mm-hmm. So I think the discussion about who it wouldn't be appropriate for actually helps explain that a little bit because, you know, it focuses on a very specific thing. And,
right.
You know, there are people who have an individual therapist that works through one modality and then a separate therapist who really just is the DBT. Maybe mm-hmm. it's the group that they're part of. So mm-hmm. I think that's an important thing for people to understand that there are people who do both.
Yeah.
It's a very specific goal of DBT. And I like how you described it as, you know, it's a course. You are learning a lot and you're learning it with other people, and part of hearing about their experience is in itself a learning, helpful experience for them.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of people who can get a lot out of different treatment modalities other than DBT and can also benefit from DBT. So that's why mm-hmm. I do it the way that I do. Also, I have been trained in different modalities besides DBT and tend to be integrative in that way anyway. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It just makes sense to me in that way.
I'm just curious in terms of your path to deciding kind of what you wanted to focus on and what you wanted your practice to be. What drew you to DBT?
It was part of my second year of doing therapy as a graduate student. I was at a site with a supervisor who was psychodynamic, but also focused on DBT. So I was trained more psychodynamically, which is why I was attracted to the site and got placed there. And then I got there and she said, okay, I'm going to train you in DBT too. And I was very unhappy actually, and I hated it at first. And I was super annoyed that I had to do this group that I had no interest in doing. And I think I felt like that for almost the entirety of that year. But I had to go through the experience of learning it myself and learning it along with clients who also weren't particularly excited about it. And I realized that I learned a ton and that I was incorporating these things not only in my individual sessions with clients, but also in my own life, and saw that it really was helpful. And that's a lot of material that I could use. And then it just sort of followed me. I think people knew that I could do it, and then I had had the training. And so people asked me to do it, and I kept doing it, and I kept doing it. And then eventually got into my own private practice when I was working on my own. It just seemed like an obvious thing to do because people find it so helpful. And I'm not a purist, which I think allowed me to kind of incorporate it into my practice in a way that made sense to me. And I think I've found that I am most helpful to clients when I can come from a place of talking about things in terms of how they make sense to me, not translating it into, you know, my perspective.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's an important point, that something that you really find value for yourself in your own life. I mean, of course, you want to share that with people. And DBT is a very respected treatment modality that has proven, you know, effects and is just highly regarded in the psychological and psychiatric community. So, I mean, I think thinking about, you know, the idea that it's just something that seems incredibly helpful is probably a reason why people are drawn to do certain therapy as therapists.
Right. Yeah. I've had a lot of clients say to me, like, why don't they teach you this in like elementary school, or why aren't parents required to take a course in, you know, for example, emotion regulation before they have kids? Like, people really, I think, often come in skeptical and then come out kind of being frustrated that no one has ever presented this material to them before.
Right.
So I think that's an interesting phenomena that I've observed.
Actually, how young does it, I mean, is this a type of modality that's used for adolescents or children?
I think commonly for adolescents. I personally don't see anyone under 18 at this point in my career, but I think very helpful with teenagers. I don't know how young, to be honest, that it's been used with, but I would say like early adolescence would be the earliest. It's pretty intellectually heavy, you know? So I think just even the concept of like observing the self, like, I think developmentally someone would need to be ready to be able to grasp that concept. That would be my thought about that.
Right. And the other thing in terms of thinking about who is leading the groups, I mean, they have to be well-trained clinicians to do this.
Right.
Right. So I guess that's a limiting factor as well. You know, I wanted to ask if someone was interested in just learning a little bit more about it, and this maybe piqued their interest a little bit, what would be a good place to start?
I believe that Marsha Linehan's website, I think it's Behavioral Tech.
Okay. And we'll look at it and get it on the site too.
Yeah. So. And you could link it. Yeah. But she has a really nice, and I have that link on my website too, just like a description of what is DBT, what are the modules, what can I expect? I mean, a lot of the questions you're asking me here today, and you can kind of get the perspective from the person who created it. And she actually struggled a lot as a teen herself, was hospitalized many times and had, I can't remember if she had at least one suicide attempt. So she's also coming from a place of this saved my life, which I think is compelling for people to read if they're on the fence at all, just to hear someone's experience or hear her experience.
Right. Yeah. It's a fascinating story that, you know, a clinician created a type of therapy that clearly kind of sprouted from her own experience with these struggles. Okay. All right. So yeah, I will make sure we link your site and also Marsha Linehan's site. Any just kind of books that people have written that you find clients really gravitate towards when they're, you know, thinking about DBT? Or
there is a workbook, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but maybe we could link this too. There's a workbook that a lot of my clients have felt was pretty helpful that doesn't necessarily require you be in group first, that it's sort of like a self-help one. I'd recommend that to people if they're thinking about doing DBT so they can kind of go through the content. The authors basically have digested it for people, and it's very straightforward. It's not like the full curriculum, but it gives people a taste of what it is and some practice exercises.
Great. Okay. Yeah. We'll make sure we get those on there. That's helpful. Is there anything that we should have talked about to give someone that, you know, is an important part of DBT that we didn't touch on?
I guess as a group therapist, not necessarily exclusively a DBT group therapist, but a group therapy therapist, like process group, interpersonal work. Mm-hmm. I think that DBT can also be a really good starting place for folks who eventually want to be in longer term group therapy, especially if interpersonal dynamics are particularly triggering for them, or that's when their big emotions show up and flood them. This can be a good way to kind of transition into something like that in the long term, which I think is a modality that people find extremely helpful, but aren't always ready for right out of the gate.
Right. You know, one thing that I realized we didn't really talk about, we didn't talk too much about borderline, or we didn't talk about at all borderline personality disorder. And I'm wondering if it might be helpful just to give a quick description of borderline personality Sure. disorder and why something like DBT could be particularly helpful for people who have that particular disorder or just traits that are kind of similar to borderline personality or some traits associated with that.
Yeah. Well, I think part of, I mean, I also did not say now that you're bringing that up that DBT was originally developed to treat folks who had this diagnosis, right? So it's actually very much designed to address these sets of symptoms. So the modules, interpersonal effectiveness, distress tolerance, emotion regulation, mindfulness, these are all specifically designed to address a certain symptom or a set of symptoms. So a lot of folks who have that diagnosis or who have traits have stormy interpersonal relationships, are very sensitive to interpersonal rejection, fears of abandonment. Folks who have that diagnosis or similar traits will often have a lot of crises in their life and struggle to manage that, have intense fluctuating feelings. And again, like we talked about at the beginning, all of those things are difficult to kind of contend with if you have trouble observing the self. And oftentimes there's an unstable sense of self for folks who have this diagnosis. So going back to the idea of like tuning into internal experience and then organizing it, I think that is really what this is designed to do. So I think it's very appropriate for folks who are struggling with those kinds of issues. And a lot of folks who have those diagnoses also, like you were bringing up earlier, also have trauma. And yeah, some of those symptoms are very similar to PTSD and will also be addressed by the skills and the interventions and the modules.
Right. But I think it's also important to stress that just because you are taking part in a DBT treatment focus doesn't mean that you have borderline personality disorder. It means that DBT can help with many different types of diagnoses. And there's a lot of overlap between symptoms that you might experience with borderline personality disorder and just, you know, just other hardships and struggles that people experience. So yeah, I mean, it's a broad kind of group of people that it could really help. But yeah, I guess it's important to think about, you know, it's interesting why it was created and how it's kind of grown from there in terms of encompassing more types of diagnoses as well.
Yeah,
and been helpful for that. Well, I really appreciate, you know, your time and hearing a little bit about DBT and educating me and the listener about it. I really appreciate it. And I thought it was really enlightening.
Great. It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been Mind Stories. With remote appointments in California and offices in downtown Los Angeles, Santa Monica, Hermosa Beach, Marina Del Rey, and Echo Park, Cal Psychiatry specializes in medication management, mood and anxiety disorders, alternative therapies, women's mental health, and more to help you get back to your true self. Visit us at calpsychiatry.com. Thank you for listening to Mind Stories, and don't forget to subscribe.